The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Welcome to it. Mondays here at Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark. Hope you're all doing well. Hope your eyesight's all good. Numbers to get in at 489-1240 or 800-825-5865. Can email the show, Chris, at hailvarsity.com. And always use that phone number if you can hear us across the Hail Varsity Radio Network. Stream the show with the Hail Varsity YouTube channel and Spotify, iTunes, Google Play for the podcast. We'll dive into some basketball thoughts, not only Nebraska's new addition with Andrew Morgan, the women's championship game, 18.7 million watched. Andy Markowski with us in about 20 minutes or so, former Husker standout. Get his thoughts on the Natty tonight with UConn and Purdue. In hour two, it's the Blackshirt Hour. Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride. A Monday with Charlie, Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer, and part of Big Red Wrap-Up will be with us. So, yay or nay, did you guys venture out to check out the 80% that we got in Nebraska with the eclipse?
Briefly. I didn't have any protection. Therefore, it was just quick little glances with my polarized sunglasses on, hoping for the best.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. No? I did hear, actually.
Oh, did you?
Well, when I rolled up, everybody was outside out front with their glasses from the last time.
And you thought it was for you.
Well, I kind of. Am I wrong? I'm just kidding. But that was I didn't think I was going to be able to see it, and then I roll up, and everybody's got glasses, and I borrowed a pair, and that was nice.
Not as cool as 2017. Let's first lay that out. Totality was sick today. Not as cool. Still like something kind of cool.
Was Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, synced up and blaring out in the parking lot?
No. Mm-hmm. I wasn't here, but I can assume not. Mostly because the Dark Side of the Moon is a total fallacy. There is no Dark Side of the Moon. Like, what side of the moon is getting the sun right now whenever we're in between? It's the dark side. So if it's getting sun, that's, complete, just illogical
thinking
you. There.
But it's the album I'm talking about.
See, that's what drugs does to you, Schmitty. That's
what drugs it sounds does way cooler.
Sure. You're just having to just ruin it for... What?
There's no such thing as the dark side of the moon. Everyone knows that.
You just ruined it. You just ruined it, but...
Hey, maybe if Pink Floyd would have listened to their teacher a little bit better instead of calling him out on songs, they'd know that there's no dark side of the moon.
Wow. Jeez. Someone's a little angry
about
the wall.
Like Pink Floyd?
No, I do like Pink Floyd. Okay. I do like Pink Floyd. I shouldn't be going this hard on them just for
no,
a little joke.
No, but the trick was to sync up the album so you could get Eclipse right as you had, at least in Nebraska, most of that eclipse. But quite frankly, I didn't venture outside. I made sure my wife, who has had retina damage, stays the hell inside. So,
good idea.
You're not going anywhere, dear. Stay right here. So, yeah, that's a thing. You've got the Natty tonight. That'll be good. Interesting topic, Elijah, you threw out with the GOAT status and the debate that's been ongoing with Caitlin Clark. They started amazingly fast yesterday and didn't have enough giddy up to get by South Carolina. Too much muscle inside for South Carolina, and they won another championship. That being said, you've got a whole new viewership number that you're going to try and build on as you pulled in 18.7 million yesterday for the women's national championship. 2 years ago, it was at 4.5 million. So the Clark effect is real. You're just not going to have a player of Clark's ilk every year, but you hope you can build on and keep the popularity going. And so, best player, and we'll get your comments in the stream as well, never to win a championship. And we can cross all sports on this. We'll get to our starting five, our first five in the stream, shout-outs in a moment. But here's my short list. And when I think of college football, and I always kind of bring it back to Nebraska. It's the easy answer, and there's about two or three teams in there for Nebraska football that were good enough to win a title but didn't. But it's going to be Captain Obvious here. Sorry, but it's the first name that came to my mind. Best player to never win a title for Nebraska football, and it's Turner Gill. Kind of the leader, Mike Rozier, Irving Fryer, Steinkuhler, I mean, that 83 team. But it's Turner Gill. As they were, you know, a bad call away from likely going unbeaten in 82. Gill was hurt in 81. They played Clemson, and it worked out to be for the championship because some teams lost pre-playoff, pre-BCS, pre a lot of things. But Gill's my guy there. For college basketball, I got to go Hakeem Olajuwon and the Houston Cougars of the early 80s. They went to four straight Final Fours. They went to a couple of championship games and didn't get it done. So it's Olajuwon there. For me in the NFL, homer pick here, but it's Marino. And then for the NBA, one of my favorites aside from Jordan's, Charles Barkley. So I got to go Chuckster with the NBA pick.
Who's the greatest all-time college football player? Not just Nebraska, but all-time college football player to never win a title. There's a long list of guys you can pick from. It's hard to win a national championship in college football.
Probably Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders. How about Andrew Luck?
Luck was really good.
Well, you look at the guys Luck was thrown to.
That's fair.
Do you know who the leading receiver was for Stanford Luck's senior year?
No. No. I know that Luck had a good offensive line, and they beat Oklahoma State. That's about as far as I go.
I mean, he also completed something stupid like 75% of his passes
his
senior amazing year.
Amazing in college.
37-10 touchdown interception ratio with his number one wide receiver being Griff Whalen. Do you know a damn thing about Griff Whalen? I couldn't tell you.
His name is Griff Whalen.
I would bet money that Griff had a trust fund.
He had 56 receptions for 750 yards, leading the team in both categories the senior year. That is a team that included Zach Ertz.
Yeah, I was going to say Ertz.
And Kobe Fleener. It was a young Zach Ertz, I believe it was a senior year Fleener, who got drafted way too high because of the fact that Andrew Luck was his quarterback.
Is he a Denver pick?
No.
I was just making sure.
like, probably a fair question.
The only name I recognize on the Stanford offense that year in terms of skill position guys is Zach Ertz.
Huh?
What about, here's a name from a similar time frame, Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, he played for one. I mean, he almost got it,
but
they
ran into
Ohio
State.
They got rocked by Ohio State. So, no, I mean, Mariota was incredible in college.
Yeah, NFL career not factoring into this, just college career.
I mean, you have some guys that I loved in college that were really pretty good, but it was either Oklahoma or it was Miami, right? Mm-hmm. Playing for the championship. You sprinkled in a couple of Penn State teams in the 80s there. But I would go Barry Sanders because of that junior season he had. It was so incredible. I mean, they finished third or fourth in the Big Eight. I think third in the Big Eight that year.
I want to bring up one more Husker specifically that never won a title. To me, it's between Turner Gill and Ndamukong Suh.
Sure.
Ndamukong Suh, for my generation, is the guy that you go. I mean, he carried that defense. The defense was great, but he carried it. He was single-handedly like the best defensive line in the country just by himself. Like, that's a guy that I understand defensive tackles are the type you think of when you think of, man, he should have carried his team to a title. But if any defensive player could have carried his team to a title, it was Ndamukong Suh.
He sadly could not play quarterback in 2009.
No.
That was a 12-win football team that finished, what, 10-4? Something like that. So it was a little rough offensively, where they had to be the number one scoring defense in the country. Let's get our starting five, our shout-outs in. You, Grandpa, is on a heater. He comes in at number one. Tuck checks in. He says, I couldn't see anything. Montana Husker fan is back in. And, yes, Montana Husker fan, I think this is your first top five. So, Montana Husker fan in at three. Jeff Snitley in at four. Mr. Snitley from the Boulder Peace Treaty Accord. Black Hills Brandon in at five. Moonbot checks in. Good to hear from Moonbot. Justin in at seven. Brian in at eight. Patrick comes in at nine. KG in at 10. So we've got our roster right there. And we'll get to more of your comments and your thoughts about some things. But KG does ask a good anonymous is also in here. He asked the question here about Caitlin and Clark. Let me find it. Yeah, women's basketball drew 18.7 million viewers. Why on earth are players not accepting Clark more? She's a huge draw. Without her, the game doesn't go nowhere near that number. Nowhere near that number. I think she's just hard to flat out take for some people. Now,
and there's jealousy too.
There's jealousy in all sports, and it's not just a women's sports thing. There's people who don't like certain players in the men's game because of a perceived attitude or act.
I mean, there's a reason Shaq and Chuck sit on Inside the NBA and complain about modern players too. There's always that divide between, oh, back in my day.
Right. And with Clark, and you could feel it Friday night with the UConn lean, with the interviews that SVP did post game with the moving screen. You could feel the ire by the UConn contingent that's in the media, the retired former pro and great college players. All that being said, I mean, just the people I've talked to that have played against Clark for years, and this is from junior high AAU level ball through high school to just where she's at right now. I mean, she's just not a real awesome teammate. Maybe she's gotten a little bit better. That's the word on her, all right? That's the word out on her. So is she a little bit of a selfish player, going to get mine? I don't know. I think her body language and her act, especially as things got deeper into the tournament versus LSU and against South Carolina yesterday, pretty high level. I thought she was poised. I thought she was mature. So I thought her body language and the way she tried to get other teammates involved. I know she took 28 shots, but I thought she carried herself real well, especially as the pressure mounted on Iowa's trip in. And, dude, I just had a feeling about South Carolina payback. And South Carolina would have had two straight unbeaten seasons had Iowa not whacked them in the Final Four a year ago. So it was there and very real. For you guys, who do you have down as your best to never win it, aside from Andrew Luck?
Well, I go to the stream. There's a couple of good answers that we have here in the stream.
Yeah,
we got a Jim Kelly poll.
Nice,
are we
four
going
straight Super Bowls.
Football.
You can do whatever. I don't know. It's a dealer's choice.
TMZ also with the Doug Flutie poll. That's a good one for the college game.
Yeah, Flutie was fun.
We have one Ricky Stanzi poll, legendary Iowa quarterback, one and only. Thank you, crew.
I think a good college basketball player that never won. Well, you could go two ways on this. They're both big men. They're both legendary. Shaq.
Sure.
Yeah. Tim Duncan.
Yeah, good call on Timmy D.
Well, Tim
Duncan
also played.
Those are some good Wake Forest teams, yeah, too, that just flamed out.
He also, did he play 3 years at Wake Forest, or did he play all four? Oh,
gosh. I don't remember.
I think he left after his junior year.
I think so as well.
I think three.
Those are two. A more recent name that I kind of want to go to just because of how electric he was in his 1 year is Zion.
Okay.
Or just that entire Duke team. They didn't even make the Final Four. They lost to Michigan State in the Elite Eight. So, I mean, there's a couple of names there, but obviously just how dominant Zion was that entire season and not even making the Final Four.
Appreciate the fact check by Anonymous. Three Final Fours for Hakeem because they went to the Final Four in 82, and they lost to NC State in 83, and then then Georgetown got them in 84, I believe, for Georgetown's title. But thank you, Anonymous, there.
Scott, now, Scott with a good poll, another one. Peyton Manning in college?
No kidding. Peyton Manning beat everybody except the University of Florida and Nebraska in the bowl game. And, you know, Peyton would be wearing it, dude, if he didn't get that one ring. He played in two Super Bowls.
One with the Colts, he got one with the Broncos. Yeah. And we all know he values that one with the Broncos a lot more.
Sure, because he was going to drink.
I don't want to talk about the one.
He was going to drink a lot of Bud Light in Coors Country. made a point about that. So we'll get to more of your comments. Best to never win it. More comments in the stream, 489-1240 to get in. We'll get into some spring football in a little bit. Some thoughts from Matt Rhule. We'll hear about Bill Belichick and his visit to Lincoln. Connection there with Coach McBride and Bill Belichick for sure. But the real thing here, too, we'll get into is roster rating. And that is something I don't know how concerned you are about it as a Nebraska fan, and this is after spring football when the portal opens back up. There's going to be a lot of bags of cash thrown at experienced interior defensive linemen. That's the theory from Josh Pate with CBS Sports. And, okay, we don't have anybody worth a damn on the interior. Let's go buy some people. Well, Nebraska is one of the teams that has so much. We're talking nearly 80% of their productivity back on defense. Are you worried about someone coming in? And I think it's about more than money for these guys like Nash and Ty Robinson that came back, fellas. To me, it's about, again, kind of finishing the job and keeping this trajectory going the right way for Nebraska football. You do have some second-year guys on that line for Nebraska that are real good. The thing that's been nice about Nebraska, though, I mean, you've had guys find a role and guys thrive in their role even at a young age. I think there's just too much, maybe I'm too wishful here if you're a Nebraska fan, but there's just too much enjoyment going on to go shopping or go somewhere else. Money does talk, though. So I'm clearly straddling a fence here.
Yes, as it's Masters Week, it's a good time to remind people there's a lot of people that left for money for LIV Golf, and a lot of people thought that wasn't going to happen.
So. That's true. We'll talk with Eddie Markowski next. Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for spending time on Monday with Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. And we say hi to the Pride of Ord, Husker standout, Andy Markowski with us. Andy, how we doing? How's your Monday, man?
Yeah, it's that time of year, man. The last college game of the year. So this Monday is better than most Mondays.
It is going to be good. I want to go back to yesterday, 18.7 million viewers for Iowa, South Carolina, and your proud papa of a really talented women's basketball player. Andy, what is this season meant to you? And just kind of put it into perspective with the following, the growth, the viewership, but of women's sports, women's basketball.
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, obviously, I'm a girl dad. I have three daughters, and you know, Alexis is probably the most visible being, you know, at the university. But you know, it started for me and really for Nebraska with the volleyball day, and then you know, obviously, the volleyball season built great momentum, and then rolled into women's basketball and what Caitlin Clark and you know, just the energy around Iowa. But I just think the energy in general around women's basketball was at a high level where, you know, I think more first-time viewers came in and realized that, you know, it is fun to watch. I mean, females are play with a large amount of skill, fire, competitiveness, sometimes more teamwork than you see on the men's side. So, you know, hopefully, you know, with the increased popularity, they'll, you know, continue to see growth and, you know, play in front of good fan bases, and you know, which makes it fun and special for the athletes that put a lot of time and energy into their work.
Andy, what's your take on Caitlin Clark's career as a whole? We had some fun in the first segment talking about the best athletes to never win a ring. Caitlin Clark falls into that category, at least at the college level, but I still don't think you can deny her greatness. What's your just take on her career as a whole?
Yeah, I don't fall into this trap that's going on now where all of a sudden the college athlete needs to win a championship. You know, you only have four tries. You don't really get to pick your roster. So I think you got to be really careful with that argument. I've watched it up close, right? I mean, I think they've knocked Nebraska out of the Big Ten tournament the last 3 years. So that's nine times I've had a chance to see her against Nebraska, and she's a generational talent. I've never seen anything like it. If you would have witnessed the Big Ten tournament where the arena was sold out of Iowa fans in a neutral, you know, a neutral setting, and then you see 19,000 go and watch them, you know, practice on Saturday before the national title. So, you know, her records speak for herself, but I've never seen one athlete, male or female, just energize, you know, people that wanted to be a part of it and wanted to watch it. And you know, just, you know, she handled it, you know, very, very well with a lot amount of pressure on her. You know, certainly, you know, there was some mannerisms on the court that I think rubbed people the wrong way. But you can't argue the talent and how fun it was to watch her play and how happy coaches are that they no longer have to figure out a way to not get embarrassed, because you were just going in there hoping that she missed a few shots and didn't score 50 against you, because there wasn't really any team that showed the ability of slowing her down. I think UConn held her to 22, and they were, you know, super excited, and most people would consider that a career night, scoring 22 points.
Andy, obviously you can't speak for Alexis, but have you had the conversation with her about what it's like to play against Caitlin Clark, to be on the floor against her?
Oh, yeah, I have it all the time. You know, Alexis, you know, up till this year, Alexis is a highly competitive, you know, person, right? I mean, she wanted to prove herself against the best, and that was to beat Iowa. And, you know, they had a chance to do that at home, and then, you know, almost had a chance to do it in the Big Ten Finals. So, yeah, Alexis, you know, wanted to go to the Big Ten to play against great teams, and obviously you had a chance to play against one of the greatest players ever. And yeah, we had talks about hard fouls and how to slow her down, and, you know, all the things that, you know, competitors want to try to get an advantage. So yeah, it was, you know, certainly that I think elevated everybody in the Big Ten, and I know that, you know, motivated Alexis in the off season, as, you know, they had not beat Iowa. I think it was the reason why Jess Shelley came back, and you know, her and Alexis, you know, are on record of after that game that they beat them, that was one of the things that they wanted to accomplish. So I think that as a competitor has helped, you know, all of Big Ten players and coaches, you know, try to get better.
Andy Markowski is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. I want to transition over to tonight's game, and continuing with the theme of really, really, really good players, maybe not up to the level that Caitlin Clark plays at, but the matchup of the bigs tonight is one of the most highly anticipated national championship matchups ever. You have Donovan Klingon, or as many people like to call him, Kling Kong, against Zach Edey, the two-time Naismith Player of the Year. What do you make of that matchup specifically tonight ahead of what should be an amazing championship game?
Yeah, I think it's a throwback, right? I mean, the post player in NBA and in college has been minimized probably over the last decade. So to see, you know, two teams that, you know, that play through a post and use a post and have a rim presence, you know, with a shot blocker, is refreshing for me as a post player. But yeah, you're right. I think both are super talented and will decide the outcome of the game. I think whichever one of them gets in foul trouble, you know, Edey got in foul trouble against Wisconsin, and, you know, they lost in the Big Ten tournament. And if UConn loses Clingdon, I just don't think they have enough size to guard Edey. So hopefully both can stay on the floor. But their ancillary pieces are really good too. I mean, both teams have you know, have talent, you know, up and down their roster. And to your point, I hope it lives up to the hype. You know, I think UConn at its best is better than Purdue, but Purdue also has, you know, just found ways to win games, and, you know, it might be their year.
Eddie, want to talk Nebraska basketball here? Andrew Morgan, part of the crew now, the 6'10 forward from North Dakota State, picking Nebraska over Minnesota. What do you like about his addition to the roster?
Yeah, I have not seen tape. I did have a chance to pull up his stats, and, you know, like his size and versatility, a highly efficient player. I mean, he shot over 50% from the two, 70% from the foul line, you know, 35% three-point career shooter. It only averaged 23 minutes this year, averaged, you know, almost 14 points. So, you know, I don't think that piece, you know, wins you the Big Ten title, but I think Coach Hoiberg is out looking for chess pieces that fit. You know, obviously you have two big returners in Williams and Gary, and you're trying to fit pieces around them, and he appears to be a very skilled, you know, 6'10 player that can post, can pick and pop, and, you know, has really shown his efficiency at the mid-major level. And you know, you look at Alabama's roster, you look at, you know, a couple of the guys on UConn, you know, you look at what, you know, Fred did a year ago with some mid-major type kids. And I think if you pick the right type of players that fit your system, you know, strength and numbers, and you can build your depth and hopefully build another really good team.
Eddie, what do you think of where Nebraska's at right now. They lost a lot. They look like they're retaining a lot. And then just tell me a minute here about Fred's ability to evaluate. And that has seemed to be really at a high level here the last couple of years when it comes to putting these puzzle pieces together.
Well, I think that portal has changed things. When you were down to high school recruiting, it was a much longer process. You're recruiting 15, 16, 18-year-olds that, really you didn't know how they were going to project. You didn't know, weight room and strength and size and the speed of the game. Now that you have the portal, you're evaluating, 20, 21, 22-year-olds that, have been in a college environment, running college systems, getting guarded by, college-level talent. So I do think you can hone in on, maybe some specific skills that players have and how that fits into your system. How we play defense can maybe protect guys that don't need to be, high-level, two-way basketball players or they need to really be able to go out and defend one-on-one. So, I just think that, 22-year-olds, you're much more of a finished product where I think you can match, kind of what they've done over 1, 2, 3 years of college and how that projects into your system. And I think the fact that Fred has a system, has a track record, he can sit there and show them on tape how they're going to fit in, which, hopefully accelerates that, that timeline with these portal transfers, because you only have a couple weeks, I think, to woo a transfer unless you have, a history of recruiting them, prior to them maybe committing to another school. So, I think all that, bodes into Nebraska's favor. I think our collective is, in the top 25 in the country, which allows us to also compete, and that, that bucket where sometimes it comes down to, just a money game and what maybe some kids are looking for. So facilities, a good system, a good style, a need, and collective tends to be the recipe to help fill these rosters.
Andy, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of potential Big Ten transfers to Nebraska. Gavin Griffith's taking a visit this weekend from Rutgers, and then the big man out of Minnesota, Pharrell Payne, has shown interest as well.
Yeah, the Payne one surprises me a little bit in the sense of how Fred has used a five and a center and, ability to play out on the floor. However, I thought he did a great job with Alec and kind of how he blended that with Mass. So, I do think it's potential, but Payne is, very strong, very athletic. Certainly would have an offensive and defensive impact on the roster. And then, I always think in conference transfers are unique because those kids know your school and know your style and have been in that environment. So I think all that, potentially could either help or hurt you. If you have a bad environment or they don't like your coaching style or, if they like Fred's temperament and PBA has been an unbelievable fun place to play, just ask the players. So, recruiting, in conference is, I think atypical, but I think Nebraska is a school that I think it would help them maybe accelerate kids having an interest in our program, our style, and just the overall culture around Nebraska basketball right now.
Andy, before we get you out of here, we need your prediction for tonight's game. Obviously, I want to make it clear, saying that you're going to bed too late and waking up tired tomorrow morning is not the kind of prediction I'm asking for. That is a given with the start time tonight. What is your prediction, though? UConn, Purdue, who gets it done? Who's maybe an MVP candidate?
Yeah, I just have a hard time picking against UConn. However, they're not going to be able to get Edie out of the lane. Klingon just is not skilled enough to take him away from the basket. So UConn has had games where they have not shot the three well. You look at, Seton Hall, four makes, they lost. I think their other loss, they had three. So the times that they've been beat, they've struggled making a three. So that tells me Purdue, potentially, has a chance if Edie can get a double team. But I'll say UConn wins a close game, even though my bracket says Purdue wing it all. So my heart says Purdue, but I think UConn is just too long and athletic on the perimeter for Purdue's perimeter players. And I think Klingon does a good enough job on Edie to help UConn win.
Eddie, enjoy tonight. Thanks for the time, bud.
All right, guys. Take care.
Hail Varsity Radio is live. Now, back to Schmitty.
Schmitty's a great guy, but he don't have a brain.
And Elijah.
You want me to speak?
I'm not pointing at you yet.
On Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Andy Markowski, the Pride of Ord Husker standout. We'll have that up on the podcast for you, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. Also, catch the rewind with the Hail Varsity YouTube channel and the different social platforms with KFOR and AM 590 Omaha's ESPN, Central Nebraska's Superstation and News Talk 900 in Columbus. We're talking in arm wrestling here with some of the best to never win it across all sports. Crew back in with more Iowa propaganda. Sean Green, the former IBAC at Iowa, or I guess we call them tailbacks in Iowa, IBAC for Nebraska. Got a shout out from Smiley Face with a cowboy hat. Connor, congrats on the gig. We have 2 weeks of you left.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Just about three.
Okay. Three if you include this week. Two more after this.
Okay.
The 29th.
So
hard cutoff.
He is counting.
I'm sorry. Thank you for the compliment, by the way.
He's counting down the days like he's Andy Dufresne. I mean, he's just marking off days.
Unfortunately, I have to bring the ankle monitor with me. They're not letting me take it off. So
yeah, that's part of the signing bonus, is it?
Part of the signing bonus?
Yes.
The old ankle bracelet.
Uh-huh. More comments on the best to never win it. Todd emails in, and good take here from Todd, Chris at HaleVarsity.com. Eric Dickerson was super great, never won a Super Bowl or a national title. That's absolutely right, as Dickerson was the dude for a lot of years running the football in college and pro. So he's up there. I think Deion Sanders has been mentioned. Do we say Bo Jackson? Because we're kind of in that.
Do we say Johnny Manziel?
Well,
I got a problem with Johnny.
Yeah, Elijah does.
You do?
Yeah, ever since he cooked me on Twitter.
Oh, well, I mean.
Personal attack.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, he did go after you a little bit on Twitter.
Joke's on Johnny. My buddies down in Scottsdale know where you live, so next time I'm down there, I'm ding-dong ditching Johnny Manziel.
I'm sure you won't be chased by a horde of Dobermans.
Well, no, the thing is I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about Johnny, because I feel like Johnny is probably still faster than me.
I think
just a little bit.
He probably is, too.
I mean, I did clock that 4.5 40 time that one time, but that's a total lie. I never came close.
You, I was going
to
say,
geez. I know you're headed to Arizona, but you wouldn't go do that, would you? Petty revenge?
Sober?
I think Johnny has not only high-tech security, but I think Johnny probably has a security team.
Oh, for sure.
Don't you think? I mean, we're talking dudes in turtlenecks and blazers.
As we talk now, that's worrisome. If we were to talk after three vodka Red Bulls, would that be as concerning? I don't know.
There's a lot of holes they can dig in the desert, my friend.
Yeah, casino reference there, yeah. I'll just say, like, I trust my own athleticism. I trust my own ingenuity. I'm a nitty-gritty type of ding-dong ditcher.
There are.
You're going to be looking for a new co-host.
There's cameras, and there are stun weapons. And they're licensed down there, I would assume.
And then there's Elijah's athleticism. So which one will you take?
It also, ding-dong ditching isn't a crime. Is it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. It can't be.
I think the trespassing part is the
I
fear.
Guess. Disturbance of the peace? I don't
Thunder,
know.
Not Collins, in off the top rope in the stream. Elijah, just drop a bag of hash, and he'll stop chasing you. You'll be good. It's not very nice.
Oh, Brennan's even funnier, though. Just throw some game film at him, and he'll run away.
Oh, man. Good job, comment section.
I love it. I love it. Brennan, well done. Not Thunder Collins. Well played. Well played. But those are some more mentions. Then we get back to the NIL.
Oh, back to business.
Sorry. Keep your hilarity coming. It's okay. Moonbot's also asking. He's got $500 burning the hole in his pocket. How does he bet tonight?
Take the overs.
Overs, you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
Line at 5.5 still.
Is it 5.5?
I don't know.
It was at 7 this morning.
Somebody got a little early in on the line then. Let me check that out.
My buddy Uncle John's out in Vegas, and that was the line this morning in Vegas. He wasn't laying any action down. He's there for, get this, a bingo tournament.
6.5.
Okay, 6.5. So people are buying the Purdue side, which is interesting.
KG says Air Bud, the best to never win it with his talent. You would think that dog would have had a few titles. We have an Air Bud reference. Well done. So, listen, back to the NIL part. I like what Andy hit as far as Nebraska being a player in a top 25 world of basketball NIL. But let's just fast forward past the 27th of April into the spring game with the portal reality that exists. I just don't see a situation where Nebraska guys may not be contacted, but I think they'll stay solid. That's probably wishful thinking, but I do think they're building for something beyond a turnaround, and it's more in that breakthrough mold with what they got coming back defensively. I think they feel too much responsibility, to be honest, if you're Ty and if you're the Polar Bear, specifically on the interior, to bring the young ones along, but also have a really good kind of go out with a bang type season.
This is probably more of a hypothetical scenario, but do you think in his short time here that Dylan Raiola has heard from anybody outside of Nebraska, considering how many schools he's been to, what his recruiting journey is like, and obviously the talent that's there?
As in, if you aren't named starter on April 28th, come on
kinda
down.
Yeah.
Or in a Caden Proctor kind of way, you have that coach, hey, hope everything's going well for you down there.
Yeah, or if, like, this doesn't work out after year one, hey, we got a spot for you.
Yeah, and that's the thing about tampering, is not all of it on its face seems like tampering. It could just be a relationship you made in the recruiting process, checking
exactly.
in and be like, hey, hope everything's well.
You commit to three schools.
It's like whenever you text your ex from 6 months ago, hey, hope everything's well. like.
Oh, that's sweet. Elijah's reaching out to
Yeah. How nice of him. That's what some of the tampering
Maybe
can
call
be.
Call him to go get a drink.
Never get that result,
no.
Unfortunately.
You know,
it's the, I thought I blocked your number.
You've been trespassing at Johnny's house. I don't want to speak with you again. No, I don't know. I mean,
it's just something to think about.
It wouldn't surprise me, but I think once, for him to come to Nebraska, similar to this defensive line group that's back, it was more than just the opportunity that is real, but or the NIL that's real. It's what's available at Nebraska is to really be like a change agent, to really change the trajectory of where this is, and be the man that's been a part of it. You can be another winner at Georgia. You can be another winner at Ohio State. Not that that's a bad thing, but this, again, with the family ties and the program.
To me, it's, could there have been tampering already going on this spring with Raiola? Sure, wouldn't shock me with his talent. The more important conversation is, would any tampering worry you at this point in time? And for me, with the money he's rolling in every single month, with the opportunity he has at Nebraska, I don't think any of that's worrisome right now. Mm. If Daniel Kalen goes and wins a starting job, do you get worried? Yeah, sure. But I don't think right now you worry about any of that. There could be a coach in the back pocket saying, checking in, hey, hope everything's okay.
Hey, how you doing? How about that Nebraska win? We'll wind down hour one next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour. We're 10 minutes away from Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride. A Monday with Charlie. His thoughts on spring ball, the coaches' clinic, Coach Belichick being in town, and then Jay Moore with us, Blackshirt Husker NFLer. Want to remind you about getting buckled up. One of every three fatal crashes in Nebraska involves an impaired driver. Why take chances if you drink or use other substances? Don't drive. Impaired driving is deceptively dangerous. A message from the NDOT Highway Safety Office. We'll probably need to sneak in our steak and a beer bet before the show concludes next hour. Purdue v. UConn.
Well, luckily, with that start time, we got plenty of time to lock it in.
We really dislike
what's,
that. Huh?
What's the word on your juice level for this? Are you geeked up for it? I mean, there's been some title games that you're like, yeah, I guess I'll watch, but I think Markowski nailed it. It is a throwback. It's pretty good with the size down low and the big guys, but also just, I mean, there's a dislikability factor too with Hurley.
yeah.
Right? I mean.
You mean future Kentucky coach? Hurley?
Well, no, I, no, there's no. Absolutely no way he goes to Kentucky. I don't
think so.
No.
It's going to be Billy Donovan.
You think so? You think he'll leave the Bulls, go back to college?
I think he's already on his way out anyway. I mean, okay. When you look at the Bulls, and this is easier for me to say because I've paid attention to them a lot. They're so, like, you look at the roster that they have on paper, and then you look at the results that they produce, and it's going nowhere fast. So I think it's right for Billy. I think it's right for the Bulls. I think it's right for Kentucky. I think it's a great fit, honestly. I would not be surprised if Billy Donovan is one of those top names for Kentucky.
Well, as to the why here, Calipari has had a bad feeling about the Kentucky situation. Lack of support's grown to a point where he didn't feel like he'd be able to stay, didn't feel wanted.
Oh, yeah, nothing to do with first-round exits against 13 seeds.
No, I mean, his stats there speak for themselves.
He's apparently, quote, miserable in Lexington.
Well, he is because, I mean, the fan base has flipped on him. Yeah. And Arkansas, and he's always been tight with the CEO of Tyson, who's been a big Arkansas supporter. You've got Walmart money, and you have Tyson Foods money down there in Pig Suey land. So he'll take a little less to go to Arkansas, have peace of mind, needed a fresh start. And that'll be it.
And let's not forget, he's going to have some job security for a while down
sure,
there.
Sure, sure. No, that's
a good program now. I mean, he can get that thing going pretty fast. Like, yeah. Musselman did a great job
at
Arkansas.
They're 2 years removed from, they an Elite Eight team 2 years ago? Sweet 16?
Close.
Something like
that. 16, right?
They were an eight seed last year. And honestly, could have been higher.
Mm-hmm.
They were a massive disappointment this year, but still a good program to be taking over.
Yeah, I mean, I think Buzz Williams is good, but I don't think he's got enough juice to be hired away.
Kentucky's got to make a splash. I think that's what you got to think whenever you're thinking of names here. Mm-hmm. Who can make a splash for Kentucky?
He's a dark horse, but I think Slick Rick, the guy who got you resuscitated.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something. That'd be a splash, too.
Well, I think you go get Slick Rick. Rick Pitino, baby.
Well, quickly here, back to the national title game where we started off this conversation. My juice level's probably like a 4 or a 5 out of 10. That being said, once the game starts, you get a full football stadium, it'll be juiced up. You get the first couple buckets in, that crowd will get me going. I'm sure once the game starts, my juice level will be there. Right now,
I'm excited,
man. It's anyone could win it. That's exciting, but like in terms of the draw, I'm like a 4 out of 10.
Short list, you've got Bryce Drew from Baylor. Hour 2 on the way.
This is Christian Peter. I'm sorry, but the stories I have about Charlie are not appropriate for the public.
The right case of the Mondays. It's Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride, on Hale Varsity Radio.
Welcome into it. It's Hour 2. It's Hale Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. We welcome in Mr. Blackshirt, a Monday with Charlie, Coach Charlie McBride. Coach, y'all geared up for the basketball game tonight? How you doing?
Sure. We're sitting here waiting because I've heard enough all week. But, you know, these poor guys, they keep saying the same thing over and over and over again. So, I kind of got to a point where I give up and I turned it off.
Yeah, it's been a little heavy. Hey, you get the exclamation point. For basketball, it's been a good spring season/session so far. For Nebraska football, we've had a few chances to hear from the coaches and some players, and I want to start there. Coach, what's it mean to you to have a guy like Bill Belichick come back to Nebraska for the coaches' clinic?
Well, that means he still cares about football. Sometimes you get an older guy and they just kind of blow you off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they don't, and I think most of it, when it's deep down inside, you really kind of like to talk to high school coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important. I think, you know, I was always of the opinion that how I started, and how it, you know, people helped me and things like that. And I think if it was to go talk to the pros or something like that, he wouldn't even go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I just think it's really important that high school coaches are young and they try. Some of them really want to go to college level or pro level, and you got to kind of work your way up. And I think that's why, you know, that he really feels like that's important to him.
Coach, it, you know, and you have a situation where there's a connection between Matt Rhule and Bill Belichick and Andy Reid, and Rhule's not been shy about those two coaches being the ones that reached out to him right after he got let go in Carolina. That's meant a lot to him, and he stayed, you know, tight and in touch with two really bright minds. Speak a little bit to the coaching fraternity. Who were some of the coaches that you really connected with or got along with, either at the pro level or the college level or even the high school level, that you'd kind of had in your inner circle? I know you and Milt were tight, but anybody outside the Nebraska family?
Oh, I definitely. It started back with my high school coach, and I knew the way he was tough, and he was, you know, demanding, and he was one of these guys. He's now in the, you know, Illinois High School Coaches Hall of Fame. But he was a guy that, you know, he was all behind us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could tell that. It was all about us, and was, you know, he really cared about us, and you could tell. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I probably took away from that. You know, you can still be a tough guy, but you can still care a lot for their players, and you can do a lot for them and try to make them better people. And I think that's pretty much where his effort went. And I just tried to, you know, I always look back at him, no matter who you go. I had some great people that I worked for. And, you know, Frank Cush was a tough guy, and we used to recruit on that and tell him, hey, you come here, it's going to be tough duty. And some of these kids, that's why they came. You know, they wanted to be pushed, and they wanted to get better. So there's always something about each one of the coaches, you know. And the coach that I worked with before, John Jardine, he had heart trouble, and but his heart was in the right place. I mean, before, and he passed away afterwards. But he was a guy. We didn't win a lot of games, but we were, you know, 50-50 and, you know, 60-40 and things like that. And the only games we ever won were Penn State, Nebraska, and some of those games like that.
It's Charlie McBride with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Charlie, I want to get your thoughts as we talk about Bill Belichick. We'll shift gears and talk about some spring football here in a second. But what's a really cool opportunity, I think, for a lot of Midwestern high school coaches to come and hear from Bill Belichick is that Bill Belichick's, I'm sure, a guy they look up to, and to some of them is an inspiration. Why they got into coaching is a guy like Bill Belichick. And I want to ask you, are there any coaches or people that stand out in your life as being the inspiration for why you wanted to coach?
Yeah, well, that, like I said, that was my high school coach. Eddie Crowder was I was kind of a guy that pushed a little bit on the players, and it was funny because I had it probably sounds terrible, but he gave me a book about 12 pages long. It was of human understanding, and it really meant a lot to me because I was kind of a tough guy on this. I was the scout team. I was a graduate assistant. I was in charge of the offensive scout team. And, you know, when guys weren't doing their job, and I used to jump on them pretty good. And one of the kids actually quit, but he wanted to go to the academy anyway. He just, I think they told him, go to school for this, and they will. Next year we'll have you come here, and that's what happened. But he ended up being, like 40 some years in the military, and so it was worth it. But you know, there's all kinds of different things you learn from each one of these people. This guy is crazy, you know. And Tom, you know, like everybody knows how he was, and you learn from that too, but you don't change. If you want to be a coach, be a coach. Be yourself. Don't try to be somebody you're not. And I think a lot of coaches, you know, think, well, I'm going to be like, you know, Bud Wilkinson or Frank Kush or any of this kind of stuff. Just be somebody who you are. I mean, it's how you feel. You can't coach when you're trying to, you know, almost like saying defend yourself. Coaching is a tough way to go. And I think one of the biggest things is to be honest. I mean, the kids know when you're not and know how that can be. And I think I've lost kids in recruiting because I was honest. And, you know, you gain some because you were honest. So it works both ways. But the idea is I think I'll take the high road and, you know, just tell them the facts of life. If they want to see a depth chart and they turn around and they see six guys playing tight end or eight guys, and they wonder, man, if I go there, look at all these guys. You know, and half of them, of course, were walk-ons and stuff like that. And, you know, the answer is, if I wouldn't be here if I didn't think he could play. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stops a lot of stuff.
Coach, is there an instance where maybe a kid thought you were too hard on him and a kid came and talked to you and that really kind of furthered the relationship, that communication part of things?
Well, I'll tell you something. I never had one that happen, but I'll tell you, the thing is I knew one thing in coaching is don't ever leave the field with a negative attitude or something negative that you might have got on a pretty tough a little bit, especially younger guys. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't understand that it really is for their own good and it really is for some reason. You know, I used to find out what they can take. Some kids, I loved it. I mean, you know, hey, you know, if you keep doing that, coach, I'm going like, this guy's nuts. but it's that way. Each guy is different as their face. Mm-hmm. And I always remember that, hearing that, you know, I think it was Bum Phillips. It was almost the first clinic I ever went to. He was the defensive line coach with the San Diego Chargers. Now you tell me how long ago that was. But I remember him saying that every person is as different as their face, and they turn on different, they turn off different. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to learn about your players in order to make them, you know, make them better players. There's some you yell at, some of you get after pretty good. Some you don't. Some you do it in private. You talk to them on the side of the field. You talk to them. Actually, sometimes you whisper to them almost. And there's a lot of guys like that that are all Americans. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they just can't handle some of that stuff. And you learn that when they're freshmen pretty much. That's why I've always started as being a little tough guy and, you know, see what they could take at first, and then they kind of go from there.
Coach, when you talk about spring ball and what Nebraska's in right now, and specifically the younger guys, the early enrollees, how would you take that approach as a coach with them? Because they're learning a new system, a new playbook, really a whole new culture. So what kind of approach would you take, and what would you suggest that the coaches take with them?
Well, the one thing is that there's guys that some coaches try to shove everything down your throat at once. We've gone different ways, and other times. I don't mean I made a mistake by saying coaches, mm-hmm. but sometimes we decided we're going to give them everything we got for spring ball. We're going to give them the blitzes and everything, and see what they retain coming into the fall. And then other times we decided we're going to go slower and go really get it done right and get to be sure the basic stuff is covered. It all works. I mean, if you asked me which one's best, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't stand here and say this is what the best way to do it is. And you know why? Because every group you get is different. And so it's kind of a thing where you know, sometimes you got a group that likes to laugh and giggle, and sometimes got a group that, you know, is really serious and things like that, but they're both good teams. And so you just have to, as a head coach, you have to kind of feel your way around pretty good. And I think that's where Tom, you know, was really special. I mean, he knew what guys were, you know, how they reacted. And I think he knew a lot more than we did because he knew the parents. And I think that's where, you know, you hear Rule talk about the parents a lot. And that's where I really feel good about him. You know, he's talking about the kid's whole family.
Coach, there's some young players making a real push in the receiver room. Linebacker Vincent Shavers out of Miami that's really made a splash. And, of course, Dylan Raiola, Danny Kalen, both the quarterbacks were up in front of the media last week. And it's really impressive to have, you know, young talent be able to seem to get it down with the mental part right now. And that's the biggest challenge, isn't it, is getting the mental part opposed to the physical. Do you agree?
Well, if you look up at the stadium, you'll see that we have about 50 more academic All-Americans than most schools have. And a lot of that is because these kids are not, you know, when you go out and recruit a kid, you can tell, you know, you talk to the counselor, you talk to the coach, and a lot of times the coaches will bring up that this kid can really learn. He can do, you know, he's a good learner. He's this and that. And that makes a difference in, you know, what you're doing. I mean, when you get down to the time when you have to make a decision on a player, those are some of the things you really, really look hard at. I know one kid, and I've said it on the radio before. One of the kids from Phoenix that came from Phoenix that played for us at Nebraska was a great player. And he went to the Raiders, and I called the coach up, and he said, we can't cut him. I mean, he can't learn the linebacker position. He just can't do it, but he can block every kick. He leads the league in blocking kicks and stuff like that. So, you know, you don't know where they're going to fit in sometimes. You know, you think, well, let's get rid of this guy, and you're getting rid of gold. Mm-hmm. You're getting rid of a money player. And things like that. So some kids have special things they can do, and you know, you can't a lot of times beat athletic ability itself. And sometimes even the good ones make mistakes. But you know what happens when they make them? They make the tackle. Besides,
sure.
Then they say, "Coach, I know I was wrong, but I also made the tackle." And that makes. Sometimes when you're coaching, it makes you feel a little short.
Coach, we'll say goodbye and catch up with you next Monday. Thanks again for giving us a few minutes today.
Okay, guys. Have fun with spring ball, will you?
Will do. Good to spend time with you.
Best time of year. Time to teach, you know. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Coach. There he is, Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride, a Monday with Charlie. Good stuff, and he loved doing the clinics, loved being around other coaches, and great insight there. And Coach goes back a lot of years with Bill Belichick and coached with Bill's dad and knows him from the Naval Academy. So pretty good stuff from Coach McBride. Podcast at Spotify, iTunes, Google Play if you want to hear the whole thing. And also subscribe and like on the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Blackshirt Hour commences. Jay Moore with us on the way with Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager.
All-State, two-year starter, and rush in for the Big Red, an NFL vet.
Is Dudeness or Duder or, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
It's Blackshirt Jay Moore with Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. Blackshirt Hour rolls forward with Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer, co-host Big Red Wrap-Up, and find him on Twitter at JMoore44. Jay Bird, how was the weekend? Thanks for the time today.
Weekend was good. You know, it was one of those weekends where there was no golfing for me, so I'm not. I wasn't going out there and playing in 40 mile an hour gusts. So it was a good weekend to get a lot of yard work done. So I got that done Saturday, some Sunday morning. Then we had sports all afternoon, activities for my son on Sunday, and then boom, here we are. Monday of Masters Week, Monday of National Championship Game, and the Big Red are getting through their third week of spring ball.
They are progressing. Some of us, Elijah was wiser than me, played Saturday.
Crazy.
Hey, let it be known, I was on the baseball diamond. It wasn't much more fun for me because at Dinsmore number one, the wind was blowing directly into your face as the home plate umpire, which made for a not fun game, getting dust kicked up into the eyes. I was cleaning dust out of my ears for 2 days.
Yeah, I stuck anyway at golf, and then round one of the day, or round one of the year, is never great. Hit a couple of good shots, but that's it. After nine, turned to the crew, and they said, "Do you want to just go drink some beer?" I'm like, "Well, yes. Yes is the answer." So we tapped out like wusses after nine, but it was just unholy.
WWTD, Schmitty, what would Tiger do?
Well,
he would have finished the round.
Listen, he wouldn't even have stepped foot out.
He would have abstained.
So funny story. This is 10 plus years ago, but before any of us had kids, group of eight of us said, let's go down to Colbert Hills in Manhattan, Kansas. You know, it was one of those February days where it was supposed to be 60 degrees. They didn't have any snow on the ground. So let's go down there. Well, as the week progressed, it got worse and worse. And I'm like, we're not playing, are we? Everyone was like, hell yeah, I'm getting away. Let's go play. We played nine holes. It was so miserable. It was 42 degrees. Mm. It was blowing 30, cloudy, not nice. So we said, let's put the clubs away after nine holes and let's go down to Aggieville and hang out. So that's needless to say, there was I think we had to get a hotel in Manhattan at the last minute. So it was a fun trip.
Jay, we'll get into some of your Masters picks here. I want to talk national title game tonight and relay it back to some of your mates. You played football with at Nebraska. Who was the Zach Edey of Nebraska basketball pickup games back in your era?
From the football team?
From the football team.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, probably first guy, tall. You could, you know, good. I mean, I would say I'd probably have to go Zach Potter.
He was on my list here.
Yeah, I'd have to say Potter. I mean he's all of, you know, Potter's all of 6'7".
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't have any 7-footer pluses playing football. So he'd probably be the first one. And he could hoop. He was good. He was crafty, had good footwork, he could shoot. So
hustler.
What's that?
Hustle guy.
Yeah.
Wonderful motor.
Correct. Yeah. Very cerebral. definitely. Yeah. Zach Potter definitely takes the Zach Edey. Check that one off the bingo card. Yeah,
he's a sneaky athlete, you know?
Just an insane motor. But was Sue a better player? Was Sue a better player than you guys thought he was, or did Sue think he was a great player and he was all right? No one just wanted to piss him off because he'd pop the basketball.
Well, the thing about in basketball, guys, it's always funny. They, whether they're in the weight room, the practice field, they're talking about how they got a sweet jumper, they got handles, they got all this stuff, and they get out there and they try to do it. But some guys, they're so athletic, they get out of control. Now, this isn't Sue. I mean, he's obviously real athletic. Sue was good. I mean, he could shoot, he could dribble, he could, you know, a really good athlete. But yeah, I mean, listen, it's hard because you're playing against other large human beings and you get your competitive juices going and you're like, hey, I'm not getting hurt right now because I don't need to get chewed out by Coach Blake or Coach Callahan or something. And you had to play rather smart around certain people because you just did not want to, get a gash in the forehead or, piss anyone off and then, or get ran over. So you had to play, you had to be cerebral on that end as well to know, who you're messing with and know when to pick your battles as well. Cause some guys, they just had a hard time turning it off. Mm-hmm. And most really good athletes, once you get them going, that competition kicks steps up and it's hard to shut it down. And, so it was a lot of fun. I mean, everyone is such a good athlete. Everyone could play. Everyone played at a very high level, in high school. And so a lot of epic pickup games going down in the rec center, on a off day during spring ball, Tuesday or I think our off days are in spring ball, like Tuesdays and Thursdays. So there's a lot of those games going down.
Jay, I like this topic here. I want one more thought on this. If you're constructing a roster and you got the starters all penciled in, but you need a sixth man, a guy who's willing to use all five fouls, bring in some energy, not afraid to be physical, which guy are you picking? Could be your teammate, could just be a guy you watched growing up. Which former Husker, though, are you picking to be that sixth man, that enforcer, maybe that Lambeer type?
Two guys come to mind. Both went to the same high school. Both are Chicago guys. Played a lot of ball with Corey McEwen.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one guy who's really good. But his teammate from Naperville as well in high school, I'd say it would be Sean Hill. Sean was a walk-on. And Sean played, in his, as a walk-on, his junior and senior year, caught a handful of touchdown passes. So, and really good athlete. But Sean Hill is that Lambeer guy. So I think that's what he was, even in high school, playing in Naperville, Illinois. He was a guy. You need someone to an elbow right in the ribs or whatever it is. Sean was a guy. So I'd say definitely Sean Hill would be that Lambeer guy to come off the bench and set the tone if it needed to be set.
Jay, as you've kind of soaked in spring football, we'll shift gears. What are your impressions? Pretty good presser by Rule on Saturday. Bill Belichick on hand. Several hundred coaches from in-state and out-of-state to check out the Nebraska operation. And there just seems real peace, or Nebraska and Rule are at peace. Just things are clicking along. Not to break anyone's arm patting himself on the back, but they just feel pretty secure right now into this second spring.
Yeah, I think everyone's more familiar. Everyone knows. I think expectations have been set. Everyone knows what to expect. You get to the fine details of everything. Your installs are much quicker. And I think you should be comfortable. I mean, last spring, it's your first time with the team, trying to feel everyone out. How is, with your players, and also you got to kind of feel everyone out with your staff. This is how your staff reacts to the new players and how it goes down, just being in a new place. And it's, it's different than how things are at Baylor or at Temple or even at the Carolina Panthers. So everyone's got to get their feet wet, get comfortable. And obviously, now being here in coaching for a year with one real season underneath them. It definitely sounds like they're more comfortable and more in tune with everybody. And, it's just kind of nice to, you have the ability to bring in freshmen, that were signed in December. Seems like more and more guys are coming in to participate in spring ball. And that's fantastic because you get them, it's amazing. Even I look at last fall and how many young guys are able to play, and a majority of them, I think, except maybe Riley Van Poppel, everyone has participated in spring ball. So I know that makes coaches happy get those young guys in here and get them extra reps, and it's also just a time that you just worry about getting better. You don't have to worry about any game planning. You don't have to worry about, the stuff that you have to worry about during the season. It's just, let's just get down to brass tacks here and let's just work on day in and day out. Let's just get a little better. And you just turn up again the next day. Let's get a little better. So it's just really simple right now. And I think coaches can appreciate that. Because let's be honest, being a coach in college football nowadays, there is no time off. You got to recruit. You got to recruit 24/7. You got to recruit your own roster 24/7. So I think this, when it's just ball on the field and just you're all you're doing is trying to get better, I think that makes Coach Rule and his staff, that's where they want to do and that's where they want to be. And so you can just see, you know, it's just the, there's definitely sound, look, talk, seem like they're at not at peace, but just, you know, at home and happy where they're at currently.
Jay, at what point during spring, during fall, is it when that first game rolls around, at what point does the team know how good the team can be? Because we've had reports out within the past week. There's coaches at some big-time programs apparently looking at their interior defensive line saying, we need some help here. We're not going to be very good. But to me, that strikes me as, man, you're not trusting your development, how much better a guy can get between spring and summer and fall. At what point does a team actually know how good they can be in the fall?
You know, I don't know. I think that's hard. I think that's hard for a player because, when I look back to my time as a player, I never thought, I ever wondered how good we could be. I just put my head down and went to work, and whatever happened, happened. If I needed to do something different, I did it the next day, and I was trying to be as coachable as possible. But it's so tough to tell because you spend so much of your time. I guess during the spring, you're going more good on good, and you kind of see who's gotten better and who's stepping up. So you know who's gotten better from the year before, but again, in your back of your mind, it's like you still know it's just practice, and it doesn't really matter until you're able to go do it in a real game. But you have to do it on the practice field first. But there's just so much, you know, especially during the season, once you kind of get into game planning, you spend so much time away from the offense and the defense. You know, you're working on scout team stuff and the offense is working on their scout team stuff that you don't know exactly what they're game planning for. I think as a player, you might have an idea, but you just never know. And I think even with some of these guys, you know, they've been a part of different teams, different staffs. They haven't been very successful, obviously. So I don't even know who some of these, you know, these older guys, I'm thinking like Isaac Gifford and Nash and Ty Robinson, who have been around for a while and who obviously are leaders of the team. I don't know how they even know how good they can be. The schedule sets up very well for them this year, but I honestly think most players are pretty naive to it all, and they just I think the mature ones don't really get too caught up in that. This, you know, I'm just going to show up on a work, I'm going to do what I need to do to get my stuff done, held my teammates accountable, and just go to work.
And now back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Blackshirt Hour rolls forward with Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer, co-host Big Red Wrap-Up. And Jay, tampering is not supposed to be a thing, but it is. And even if somebody doesn't have their name in the portal, that's not going to keep, you know, a friend of a friend's program from maybe reaching out. Mm-hmm. And I look at what Nebraska's built. I look at what's happened with their front line, and that's Ty and that's Polar Bear. I look at their really talented second-year guys with Len Hart and Prince Will and Van Poppel. And Judy's a guy, too, that was cited as a wild card that is in a really good spot, and you could see some jumps from him from Coach Knighton. Do you worry about Nebraska getting rated? And it's to Elijah's point just a moment ago with Josh Pate's tweet that some teams who are really thin on the interior defensive line around college football, some big spenders, may try and go shopping. Do you think Nebraska could be immune or will be immune from it just because of the relationship this staff has with their kids?
I don't think you're ever completely immune to it. Listen, this world is a crazy place, and some people just do whatever they have to do to get an edge up. I feel really good because I feel like if Nash and Ty and Isaac, you know, you're just speaking of the D-line period, I guess, but even just Nash and Ty, these guys could have went and put themselves in the NFL draft if they wanted to. They made a choice to come back and play because they know they're trying to build something and they got something developing. And yes, it does help that you have the 1890 around to support them and to support the football program and you know, all the athletic departments at the university. So I'm not too concerned. I think it's, listen, I know it is, you know, we're talking lots of, I mean, it's big time money now. I mean, these NIL deals are huge. Hundreds of thousands of dollars that these young kids are getting paid. And that's kind of brings out the, you know, you start getting agents involved and just bad decisions. And you sometimes agents just start looking out for themselves and not what's best for the kids and the players. So I'm not surprised by any of this, that potentially is going on, but I'm not too concerned. I think if they were going to leave, maybe they would have done it after the season, but you don't go through spring ball. You don't go through all these things. And that's just, I think the kids are too good of kids to do that. Mm-hmm. I think they come from too good of families to do that, to make those kind of irrational decisions. So I'm not too concerned, but listen, I'm also don't want to be too naive to think that that's not going to happen. I mean, it could happen eventually, and I'm sure it's going to happen to other players. But I mean, just look at, the Proctor deal from Alabama to Iowa, potentially now back to, you know, going back to Alabama. It's just, you get young kids involved in making decisions based off money. And you get other people, family members that are looking out for themselves and not out for the player. At least you're going to have scenarios like that happen. But I feel like the football program at Nebraska is in a pretty good place. And I think with Rule and this is how he communicates with his players and how Coach Knight communicates with his players and so on and so forth, that, you know, like I said, I don't ever say we're completely immune, but I think we're damn close.
Jay, Masters Week is here. Scheffler is your number one, but pretty low on some of the betting boards. You got Rahm. Can he go back to back? Kepka, Rory, Spieth, Zalatoris, one of our favorites. Wasn't that long ago he was swinging away at Wilderness Ridge. Who do you like this weekend? Do you have a win, place, and show?
Yeah, you know, it's, I have a list I've kind of gone through, and so there's so much data that's available for the Masters because it's always at the same course. So you can kind of see who's performed well in the past compared to, you know, all the stats, putting to inside of 100 to 150 to 185, all of this stuff. You can break it all down. Initially, my I would say I had a win, play, show, not that order, but I'd give you my top three. Two of them come from LIV Golf. I like Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka this week. Both have played well in the last year. Brooks, you know, won the PGA last year. He's finally healthy. I think Bryson's been playing really, really well. And I think for my third guy, as I'm looking at my list over here, godly, I mean, it doesn't take much. I mean, Scheffler's ball striking is so freaking good that he has an average putting week, he's going to win. And if he puts average, he's going to win. He's just that good. So I also like Xander Schauffele. Guy's played a ton this year and played really, really well. So I'd say there's my top four. Mm-hmm. You get two PGA guys and two LIV guys, I think, are gonna battle it out. But it's my favorite time of year. It's the best. It's my favorite sporting event. I was able to go back in 2017 for a couple days, and it's just nothing like it. You just have it on the TV all day. You know, I wish it happened a couple times a year, but this is my favorite week of the year, boys.
Jay, as you look at the forecast down in Augusta, we got rain forecasted Wednesday night into Thursday, some rain showers on Thursday as well, and then overnight rain Thursday into Friday before the rest of the weekend clears up. I'm not asking about schedule-wise. That's for somebody who makes a lot more money than me to figure out how they're going to play through some rain and make sure y'all get it in by Sunday. But how do you think that changes the golf course? Obviously, green's going to be a little bit softer. And yeah. Do you think that favors anyone in particular?
Well, when it you got to look. So when it's softer, and talking about the fairways, that makes them bigger. But also, guys are going to be able to get more roll. So it's going to favor guys who carry it further. Off the tee, so yeah, your guys like Brooks Koepka. I mean, they all hit it a mile anymore, anyways. But you know, your Brooks Koepka, your Bryson DeChambeau, your Dustin Johnson's. I mean, Rahm hits it plenty far. Scheffler still hits it. I mean, they all hit it 300 plus in the air, so that's not gonna be an issue. Greens will be softer, but they have that. You know, Augusta has the sub air. They have a system underneath it that can dry out the greens. So they can kind of turn those bad boys on and let that go to work. But it's also just the draw does matter if there's weather, because if you're off early on Thursday, you're late on Friday. And if you're late on Friday, you're off early on Friday. So if you're off late on Thursday, you're early on Friday. So kind of getting that right wave does matter with weather. So that could potentially provide an issue. But any more, people that win Augusta are long. It's a big boy golf course. They've extended it. They've lengthened it numerous times. So I would think you're not going to have your guys like Brian Harman and your shorter hitters just aren't going to be Zach Johnson won it 10 years ago, laying up in every par five, but the weather was so bad that he was able to get away with it. I think 2 over par 1 it that year. So if it's going to be wet, it's going to definitely favor the guys who can carry it a long way off the tee.
About 30 seconds, Tiger does what?
I think he makes a cut. Listen, he's not going to play much anymore. He knows this golf course better than anybody. He knows where to miss on certain pins. He knows what angles to take. He knows what little slopes and things do. I think if he makes the cut, I think that's a win. I think he's unfortunately a long ways away from competing to win. He might get himself up there close, but that body's been through a lot. To compete and walk on this hilly and undulated golf course for 4 straight days will be taxing, but I think he makes the cut.
Jay, we'll get hollered at you next Monday. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Yep, you got it, boys. Thank you.
Good to hear from Jay Moore. We'll wind down a Monday next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, where you can download the podcast, give us a review, what you think, and the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. You can watch the show daily that way at 4. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. Follow the show on Twitter at HVarsity Radio. So we'll do our steak and a beer bet tonight, fellas, as it is Nebraska fans rooting for who? Probably Purdue, because you got the 16-point win over Purdue this season in a magical moment, court storming part one against the Boilermakers. 6.5 points, that number seems fair. I don't like Hurley, but what Hurley's got is fantastic. I'm going to go UConn, and I'm going to say they cover it. They win it by 8, 82-74. UConn cuts down the Nets a second consecutive year, and then Hurley can pull a Roy Williams as he's asked about the Kentucky job right after he wins his second natty. That's where I'm going. It's going to be UConn over Purdue, but hey, at least Purdue didn't get bounced by a 16 seed this year.
That's a win. I'm going to go on the side of history. What happened last time a 16 seed beat a 1 seed in Arizona?
Virginia, huh?
Virginia won it the next season. I think it provides some added juice to a tournament run whenever you do come off the disappointing result the year before. My head tells me UConn, but I don't know. I think I got to ride on the side of history here. I'm a big history guy, and the side of history would tell you that any time a 16 seed is knocked out a 1 seed, the 1 seed has gone on to win it the next year. Let's see if history repeats itself. I'll take Purdue tonight in a close one. I do think your bet for tonight is the overs, so given that is what I'm suggesting.
What's the line?
I think it's 144. Is that the number? Let's look that up, make sure I'm right. That's just off the top of my
Tiger
head.
Tiger Shark Diver says Purdue v. UConn, nerds versus old money. That's how he's deeming this matchup.
I'm going to take Purdue 84 and UConn 80.
Okay. Hope you're right, even though it's steak and a beer time. What do you say?
Well,
Connor,
the history is always a factor, and I think it has been in this run. I think everybody at Purdue has kind of looked at that team. Even Kyle Guy, who was on that Virginia team for both years, has spoken to the Purdue team before. He spoke to them in the preseason. He gave them a speech. Matt Painter is one of the best coaches in the country. He's one of my personal favorites. I really love his demeanor. The only problem is Virginia didn't have to play UConn that second time around. Purdue does, and they got to play Dan Hurley's squad. So I'm going to go UConn to repeat. First team since Florida did it with Joakim Noah, Al Horford, and Billy Donovan at the helm. I just think UConn's too good. The battle inside will probably be won by Edie, but I think the guard play will be won by UConn. I think their supporting cast is just a little bit better. So give me the Huskies 79-72 when they go back-to-back.
I'd also like to make one note here as you look at the Hail Varsity Radio Bracket Challenge. If you're rooting for that, we still have Mark at the top of it. I believe it's Mark. It's Mark E, 1956. He's in the 99.9th percentile. His bracket is in the top 1,000 of America. He's got Purdue beating UConn tonight, so for his sake, I will take Purdue as
Where'd I end up?
You are currently sitting in 12th place.
So I dropped from 6 to 12. Okay.
And you have Purdue in that.
Yep, I do.
Everybody else has UConn in the bracket challenge, aside from you and Mark. So if Purdue wins it tonight, Mark will have a very impressive bracket.
Wonderful. Back tomorrow at 4. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager.